Now, this group, the alt-right, were until a few years ago not that well known among journalists yet, you know, since the Trump candidacy. Much has been talked about this shadowy group. Can you tell us what defines the alt-right and how they differ from the traditional conservative movements?
Sure. The alt-right is kind of an umbrella term for bandwidth of radical right thought. It ranges from hardcore neo-Nazis, white nationalists, to more slightly muted. The alt-right is very much about white nationalism and promoting the precepts behind it. In some cases, it's extremely vicious. In other cases, it poses itself in a more benign version, but ultimately kind of leads you down that same path. And it's different from the old radical right. The old radical right was very much a backwards-looking movement. It was always talking about restoring traditional views. And its demographic, as such, was really tended to be older, 40 to 60. And that includes neo-Confederates, Ku Klux Klan, Patriot militia movement. But the alt-right is a very new phenomenon. I'd say it started around 2010. It was almost entirely online and has mutated, especially after Trump's election, into something that's trying to manifest itself in the real world. But as a result, part of its appeal is really to younger demographic, specifically white males between the ages of 15 and 30. And it appeals to them by using very modern techniques, social media, and using popular memes. They tap into pop culture in ways that they never did. They use humor, such as it is, in ways that have been unthinkable with the old radical right. And it's highly transgressive humor. It's kind of let's be as racist as we want to be humor, which is, of course, the kind of thing that appeals to, you know, 15-year-old boys. It's really aimed at recruiting a fresh generation of racists.
There was a time after the Oklahoma bombings, it seemed like the racist right was very much discredited in the eyes of the American public. You talked a little bit about, so what you've talked about how the internet has sort of inspired sort of some of this right-wing exercise. Do you want to talk about what do you think are the elements that have seen it sort of recover in some sort of form of popularity?
Sure. Well, a lot of it has to do with what's happened since 1995 when the Oklahoma City bombing happened. And I have to explain, of course, that in 1995, it was actually still very shocking to the American public that a white person would engage in an act of terrorism. And so we had this brief period between 1995 and 2001 when it was possible for Americans to understand that terrorism could be white-based. But after 9/11 happened, the entire discussion of terrorism really transformed and changed. And it became common in the media to basically depict terrorism as being the product of people with turbans and brown skin. So that definitely changed, you know, broader public perceptions. But it also was very common during those years for people to dismiss any concerns about right-wing extremism, to suggest that this element had completely gone away in American life. And, you know, those of us who actually track this stuff knew that that was false, that it was still lurking up and always looking for its opportunity. And particularly what actually was happening a lot was two strands. There was this really sharp increase in authoritarianism within mainstream republicanism that occurred after 9/11. Within mainstream conservatism, these authoritarian strands particularly took the form of attacking liberals or war critics and accusing them of hating America and being traitors. And at the same time, there was also this sharp increase in conspiracism, the, you know, Alex Jones variety. And those folk were out there busy spreading the idea that the 9/11 attacks were secretly a false flag run by Israeli or whoever it was that they wanted to blame for the attacks.
And a few years later, you would have the birtherism of Barack Obama's birth certificate, which would obviously get a lot of public attention.
Yeah, and that was the moment when the conspiracist element and the sort of mainstream conservative authoritarianism really came together. And the main venue for this, of course, was the Tea Party. But the birther conspiracy theory was representative of that convergence because, of course, during the Bush years, mainstream Republicans didn't want to promote conspiracism at all, since the object of the 9/11 truther movement was George W. Bush. But as soon as Barack Obama was elected president, then that gap completely vanished. It's been really a matter of months. And we saw it coalesce in the Tea Party. And yeah, I think its apotheosis was the birther conspiracy theory. That was the origin of Donald Trump's political career.
I mean, so there's been talk that Donald Trump has sort of had a hostile takeover of the Republican. I've certainly seen a lot more of this sort of hard right views being normalized in conservative discourse. Do you think that we've seen nativist elements of the right now driving the political discourse of the political right?
Well, yeah, I think it's very clear that the conspiracist right is driving the discourse on the mainstream right, because we're getting all these kooky conspiracy theories popping up. The QAnon and Pizzagate and what have you kind of conspiracy theories. And these things are actually being promulgated by the president himself. He's writing about fake news and sort of creating this division within media reportage. And it's a false dichotomy, of course, but it is very effective for him because it actually creates chaos in the information stream. In times of chaos, when people are unsure what is the truth and what's not, there's a great deal of fear that. And the typical natural psychological response for the average member of the public is to reach for authoritarianism. And this is ultimately what this is all about, is driving this rise of authoritarianism, not just in the United States, but around the world. We see authoritarianism taking roots not just in Russia, but Turkey and in Hungary and in Italy, obviously in the Philippines and in Myanmar and in China, and not to mention North Korea. This is about authoritarianism ultimately. And authoritarianism is sort of a psychological phenomenon that these guys are deliberately fomenting. They're deliberately reaching for it because authoritarianism, of course, is also profoundly anti-democratic. And their target is democracy itself. It's democratic institutions that they're seeking to undermine.
So the discrediting of the media, in a way, and also with the fact that we've sort of moved away from sort of broadcasting often to narrow casting, and there's so many different outlets, you don't have those sort of common voices like the sort of Walter Cronkites or something in the 60s. Do you think that has a lot of to do with the reason why the alt-right has been so successful?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's pretty interesting how they've been able to play this bizarre credibility game. They'll promote this idea that your mainstream media can't be trusted. And ultimately, it creates this bizarre combination of skepticism and gullibility, where they're skeptical of anything that's presented by mainstream media sources or any kind of authoritative news source. But their skepticism suddenly disappears when they're presented with a conspiracy theory concocted by Alex Jones. And so they become eagerly willing to gobble up any kind of nonsense that their alternative sources can provide them. And, you know, that's how conspiracy theories have always worked. People believe that they have secret information that nobody else has access to. And that feels personally very empowering. But they're playing on that bond as a means of actually enhancing authoritarianism within the body politic.
What about talkback in America and the sort of partisan news outlets like Fox News? Do you think they've also worked in a way of normalizing fringe groups?
Oh, yeah. And a lot of the authoritarianism actually does originate from Fox News. And it's become more egregious in recent years, especially during the Trump years. Right now, we've got Tucker Carlson going on air and promoting white nationalist ideas like Lauren Southern's claims about white genocide in South Africa. Carlson had a segment about that recently. He also, by the way, recently attacked the organization that I work for, the Southern Poverty Law Center, accusing us of lying about white nationalists and the rise of it.
Do you think Australia has to be more vigilant? Last week, the Conservative Party installed a new prime minister, and this was dislodged in part because of belief that the current prime minister didn't appeal to One Nation type voters who are very much opposed to immigration.
Yes.
Now, this coup was fueled by some pretty significant media voices.
Right. I watched Bob Catter's rant about the recent speech in the Senate
for
about
Fraser Anning,
final
yes.
solution.
Yes.
And, you know, that's obviously a real concern. Sort of stuff is spreading. And it's not a surprise that it's spreading to Australia because you do have a media environment that's very conducive to it, since you have basically Murdoch owning almost all the newspapers in the country.
We've also had a problem of the regional press. They've closed a lot of bureaus, and a lot of people now get their information from Facebook in some of those sort of rural areas. So how would things like Facebook, the more reliance more on information from sources like social media, causing a problem around the world when it
Well, of course, it does go beyond, the intentional planting of false stories by people like Russian operatives.
Yeah.
We saw in the election in 2016. But Facebook and social media, there really is no fact-checking that goes on. There's no restrictions or restraints on spreading false information. And I think that's a problem because ultimately a lot of this is about polluting the information stream in ways that really distort the discourse. And it obviously gives a lot of room to someone like Pauline Hanson to go out and lie about what's happening with immigrants in Australia, something she's done for a very long time. But the restraints that normally kind of held a lot of that rhetoric back are really eroding. And so I trust that Australians are starting to wake up to this, or at least I hope they are, because it certainly happened to the United States. Maybe the horrible example of what we're struggling with now would be cautionary to people here. I would like to think so.
There's certainly a fear about sort of the foxification of news, particularly one network, which after dark goes from being news to just being completely opinion. So there's a certain broadcaster called Sky News who about 2 weeks ago put on an actual white nationalist, which is enormously humiliating for an organization which during the day actually runs a credible news operation, but at night it's obviously found it's cheaper and it's able to get a certain niche by appealing to some pretty dreadful worldviews.
And I'm familiar with that episode. All I can say, I would say I was actually rather encouraged by the public's response, because it became very clear that the people who put that interview on the air were subject to really sharp public scorn from broad swaths of the public. And that's always been one of the reasons that this stuff hasn't been circulated before, was because nobody wants to have their reputation soiled by being seen as helping promote bigotry. So you'll actually lose business if you do that stuff. And it's the same thing with what's actually happening to Alex Jones right now. He's in court having to defend himself from the parents of Sandy Hook victims, because he spent several years promoting this idea that the Sandy Hook massacre was actually a false flag and that those children never really existed. And the result of the flying monkeys that listened to Alex Jones descended upon the parents of these victims and began seriously harassing them in their homes and accusing them of being part of a fraud and telling them that their children never existed, which is really a horrifying idea that anyone would have such a lack of humanity that they could do that. And yet it's very much part of what happens in the conspiracist world. So you know what? I think he's actually going to lose a huge ton of money. It's long overdue. Yeah.
So a whole lot of the platforms have decided they're not going to broadcast it. So Apple, YouTube, I think only Twitter is the only main platform that's still holding Alex Jones.
Yeah. And it was, of course, they call it a ban and people are calling it censorship. But what it actually is these platforms began to realize
the image
that they were going to be legally liable for helping host this information, for which there were really horrible consequences for real people in their real lives.
So do you have any advice on how the media and civic institutions should deal with the claims of the alt-right and radical nationalists? Is it a matter of ignoring, or should media really work to try and repudiate the ideology?
Well, you can't ignore them away. It's not worth it to attack or to criticize every single kooky conspiracy theory that they trot out, to tell you the truth, because there's so many of them and they're so bizarre that they're not worth their time. But basically, I think the media needs to be able to recognize when false information is beginning to gain traction, and they need to recognize that they have a role in countering that false information and providing the public with real information undermines that pollution of the information stream. But they do have to take it seriously enough. It's like taking the alt-right in general seriously. I mean, if you want to just dismiss them as a minor faction that can have no effect, what you're actually doing is giving them room to grow and fester, because they do grow in darkness. They count on darkness. They actually see silence as a kind of tacit approval. So it's really actually quite vital for civic leaders, and those includes those in the media, to stand up to this and say no. And there are a lot of ways of saying no, but for people in the media, the best way of saying no is to provide factual counter information and to rebut it.
Well, it is very interesting. I mean, Australia itself is going to be dealing with the One Nation Party. It spiked in the 90s. It seemed to sort of dissipate, and it does tend to, just because of the sort of disorganized nature of it, end up in sort of all these sort of squabbles within its own party. Pauline Hanson is getting an enormous amount of media attention in this country. It is a worry that...
you may recall, of course, that, you know, One Nation, when they were having their spike in the 90s, their target was Asian immigrants. Yeah. And, of course, that mutated over time, and then it became Muslim immigrants. But the whole object, of course, is to whip up xenophobia and fear and increase the demand for authoritarianism.